Raised Rowdy. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nikki T.
And we have our lovely guest today, Megan Patrick.
Hello. Hey,
thanks for coming on.
I'm so excited to be here. Same. I love the digs. It's
great. We got a legitimate studio now. It's awesome.
Super legit.
Yeah. The last pod that we did with you, I think 2019. And Airbnb, the before four, yeah.
Yeah, before the before times.
Yeah. We were in town doing a whiskey jam takeover and had like a Airbnb, and that's where we had you do the pod at a kitchen table at the Airbnb, I think.
What town was it in?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh. So this is before you moved here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The pre-days.
And you lived here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been here almost 8 years.
Crazy.
Well, yeah, like 7.5, I think. But the first time I met you was at Alan Jackson's bar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Our first ever.
Was that CMA Fest?
Yes.
Okay.
Our first ever event we hosted ever.
I remember. You played,
which is amazing. Thank you so
amazing.
Much for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was just as stoked to be there as you were to have me there. So
I remember that show too. We had you booked and we had Royal Lynn booked.
Yep.
Who now Royal's like popping off in the rock scene, but she was like incredibly excited to get to play the same event as you.
So it's like, dude, that's awesome.
She's killing it, man.
I love it.
I feel like the Megan Raised Rowdy relationship has been strong.
Yeah.
For many years.
If you look up Megan Patrick, I'm like, that's a Raised Rowdy girl right there.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm just happy to keep that connection over the years and
let's
see.
Cheers, y'all.
Yeah,
cheers.
You got the way you guys have built and grown things, and I appreciate you sticking with me too.
We love you, sis. We're super thankful to have you as part of the fam.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because as we're recording this, we're about to go to our first event, well, the first Raised Rowdy event in Canada.
I love that.
I know.
It's the homeland and one of my favorite places in Canada too.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna have so much fun. It's so beautiful.
I'm
out there.
So excited. Everyone says as soon as I say it, their eyes light up and I'm like, man, it must be really good.
It's really cool. Yeah.
So I think this weekend in Nashville, it's going to be 100 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 70 in PEI.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for that.
Go figure. I have 1 week and weekend at home for the first time in I don't even know how long. And it is
100.
It's going to be nightmarish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to golf. But like also, I don't want to die of heat stroke while I do that, you know?
Unintended.
Yeah. I'm not a big golfer. Matt just golfed again for the first time in like a few years. I think he's
just
catching
golfed
the bug again.
Again for the first time.
Yeah. Like he golfed 3 years ago, but now he's golfed
again. He's
for the
golfed
first
the second
time.
Time.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think he golfed before. But
actually, I just golfed this weekend and for the first time ever. Not in the last year, I would say. I've golfed a lot. But we were in Canada. We were in Moncton, which I only know from Trailer Park Boys. So it was cool to see what... Yeah. And it was a beautiful, super clean town.
Yeah.
And it was very sweet. And we just got hammered on the golf course. Luke rented the entire course out, and we just had us a day.
What a blessing.
Oh,
that's,
my God.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The drink cart just followed us around.
Well, if you rent the course, I guess that's how it is.
Yeah, I guess you're the only customer, so.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun.
That does sound pretty epic.
Yes. It was wonderful. But Canada is a blessing. I'm excited to share that with you, Nick, now. We've got to hang out, was it 2 weekends in a row?
Yeah.
Ish? Something
ish,
like that?
Like, one, I think 1 weekend apart, yeah.
Yeah.
The both coasts. We did more the Maritimes with Moncton, and then before that, we were in Calgary out on the west. Western side of things.
Crazy.
I've seen you play in America. I've never seen you play in Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
That was the first time?
Oh, yeah. It was cool. It was a different experience.
Yeah.
There was a shit ton of people.
Up. Yeah. Yes.
There was a shit ton of people out there.
See, I told you guys it was cool.
Yeah. Well, you've been cool way before we knew you. Way before everybody knew you, honestly.
Thank you. No, that, honestly, though, Moncton was kind of like insane.
Yes, it was.
Like, we played at 3 p.m. on the last day of the festival. And we were like the first of five. And I just was like, kind of like, well, we'll just go out there. I always tell the guys, I'm like, we play the same show. I don't care how many people are out there. We play like we're the headliners and we play the same show every time because that's who we are. And when I was like getting ready to go out there, I kind of took a peek out. I almost didn't even want to look and get in my head about it. And I went, what is going on? That was crazy. Those are the moments that fill up the tank, though. Those are the moments that keep you going and say, hey, you're doing something right. because we need those, because there's a lot of moments where you're like, what the hell am I doing? And is it working? Does anyone care? You know, so those moments, you got to really, really appreciate them and like soak them in, you know?
Yeah. And the weekend before, two weekends when we were in Calgary, another there's a shit ton of people there too.
It was awesome, and it's just so it's so rewarding to me, and it just fills my heart up because, you know, one of the things when I made the decision to move to Nashville, it was really important that I maintained, you know, the fan base that had been with me from the beginning in Canada. You know, touring in Canada is always going to be super important to me. There are people that come to my shows. They've been following me since my bluegrass days, like before I was even Megan Patrick, the solo artist. And it's just like so cool to me and so rewarding to see those same people come back year after year and then also see the audience grow. And for I want them to know that, like, hey, just because I moved to Nashville to become a better songwriter and to challenge myself and open myself to a whole new market, I still love you guys. You're still the one. You're still the one.
Still the one.
Yeah. Another Canadian icon.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you got to move to Nashville to get your team around you.
Yeah.
Shout out to the team. Hi, yes. Randy. Randy. Get the shout out on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, I found incredible team. The best friends I've ever had. My husband. You know, Nashville has as hard as it's been really a blessing for me. And the biggest thing was I wanted to create and write songs every day. I wanted to be surrounded by incredible musicians and creators and artists. I wanted to be challenged and humbled. And when you're in a small town that doesn't necessarily have this big music scene, it's like I don't want to be a big fish in a small pond kind of thing. And I also wanted the opportunity to tour constantly and consistently as much as I wanted to. And as much as I love Canada and as much as I love touring there, as I'm sure you're learning the more you get out there, there's only so many markets. There's only so much touring you can do in a year, especially if you want to play the bigger festivals, which you do, of course. And then trying to work around, you know, proximity clauses and all of that, it's hard. Like you can't just tour all the time whenever you want. I mean, whereas like you come to the U.S., I mean, shit, you could go just tour Texas alone for your whole life and never run out of places to play.
People do that.
And that was a huge part of the appeal for me.
Yeah, makes sense. And, I mean, I'm sure that's a big challenge. I remember talking to Jade Eagleson, another Canadian artist who kind of did the same thing,
Jade.
Made the leap.
Yep.
And he was like, man, I remember coming down here and playing a writer's round and just seeing how good everyone was. And it just makes you want
to
be better.
Like, oh, shit, I need to get better. I need to write better songs. I need to work harder.
Meanwhile, that night I was like, no, Jade, everybody knew you were really good already. You know? And it does break through, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I talk about with Canadian country music is how it's almost similar to the Texas scene, right? Mm-hmm. In that there is a segment of fans, even when we have events here with Canadian artists, or like we've done those two all Canadian nights. Like the Canadian fans come out in droves. They love it, and they're so supportive of other Canadian artists. Mm-hmm. And it seems like for me, like that's kind of how Texas is.
Yeah.
Where it's like a Texas artist, they'll go support that Texas artist, even if they're in a new town where that artist is coming to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like, it almost feels like a parallel or like a little bit of a cheat code in that world, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
The thing that I'll say about you is... Your live show, you talked about putting on the best live show you can every time.
Yeah.
Your full band live show is one of the best performances in country music. I really believe
thank
that.
Thank you. Well,
like, you're amazing on stage. You make sure that your band's amazing as well. And it's just from start to finish, it's a journey.
Yeah. No, not really.
Well, you just keep the people around you that you know are good.
No, I just, when I find people that I love who are really talented and who have the same, you know, work ethic and approach to the music as I do. Like, if you don't love the music, that's cool, but you can't be in my band. You have to love this music genuinely. I don't want hired guns. I don't want this to just be a job. And my band, like, I love hearing like their favorite songs to play. And when they're like, oh, can we play this one? Can we play? Cause it shows me like, okay, they genuinely love this music. And that passion translates to the audience.
Yeah.
You know, and the chemistry, and like, do you like my band is my family. I love them. They're my brothers and sisters, you know, my people on the road. And so, and again, I think that translates, you know, you watch Luke. I mean, you guys have been playing together for so long. There's a camaraderie and there's a chemistry there that just cannot be manufactured outside of just spending a lot of time and having a deep respect and love for the people you play with. Because I always played in bands. I wasn't always a solo artist. You know, all I did was play in bands growing up. And so it was a little weird for me at first trying to find that balance of like, okay, I am kind of the boss now.
Yeah.
We're not a band anymore, but trying to keep some of the things that I loved about being in a band and that camaraderie and that energy, but then also knowing when sometimes like I have to be like, hey, you know, I have to assert myself in a way and kind of be the bad guy, be like, hey, like you're kind of effing this up right now. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
You can cuss on here if you want.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah,
just making sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love my people and I take a lot of pride in my live show. It's always been something that's really mattered to me. One, because I just love it. I love entertaining. I love mm-hmm. playing live. I mean, that's what I've always done before. I did a lot of the other stuff that comes with this job. That's the one thing that's been a constant in my life for as long as I can remember. I had my first band when I was like 13. We were called The Sirens, which I stand by as a sick band name still.
Still, yep.
That's great. Way cooler than my middle school band name.
And so my friend Hill, who now is this incredible, really successful producer and songwriter, it was her idea to start the band, and she asked me to be in it and sing. And dude, we would literally go to assemblies at like other schools, like middle schools, like grade schools, elementary schools. And we would roll up with our little like our amp and our mic and like a kick, a snare, and a hat.
Yeah.
And we would play our like first gigs. We're playing for like school assemblies at like 9 a.m.
That's kind of great though.
But it was like, even then I was like, this is sick. Like we're a band. We got a gig. Oh, sorry. I might be late for first period. I got a gig, you know?
So great though.
And I've been late to first period ever since.
Yeah. My first gig ever was, there was an open mic night at this like dessert shop. There was like ice cream and like they had like cakes and stuff. It's mm-hmm. called Doctor Desserts. And there was open mic night and we saw it and we're like, we're gonna play. And we were like, can we bring our drums? And they're like, okay. So we went and brought like drums, a guitar amp, bass, our PA and everything. And just like, and then like my whole soccer team, and then like my, I think it was like eighth grade or something, maybe earlier. So it's like my, you know, little middle school girlfriend came, and like we just filled the place
she
out.
She was swooning in the front row. Yeah. I just know.
And
it.
we played three songs. It was Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Naturally.
Classic.
Sunshine of Your Love by Eric Clapton.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one other song. I forget what it was right now. Probably like Green Day or something like that, you know? Yeah. Like want to come around or something.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, the only thing I ever really played was recorder back in the day.
You know? Oh
yeah.
No!
I took a guitar my senior year, and my guitar teacher was like, "You know, Nick, this isn't really for everyone." You know, mm-hmm. he's like, "Maybe you should try drums."
You know what? I'm sure your teacher was a nice guy, but I hate teachers like that.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna get on my soapbox here for a little bit.
Please do.
Because I've taught a lot of people how to play music. I was a guitar teacher for years and years before I was really touring and all this and that. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is an art to teaching.
Yeah.
Pedagogy, it's like, it is an art.
I agree.
And some people just don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
I've
a high school
teachers
teacher.
And not great teachers. Yes. And it's a world of difference.
And I will say, and something that broke my heart I heard recently was our security guy, Ken, who is an absolute sweetheart guy. He's a, you know, retired cop and now he works for Luke. But when he was like 4 or 5, he was taking violin lessons. And he said, his teacher said to him, "You can't hear pitch. You'll never be able to play music. You should just quit right now."
Did he write it on
a
napkin?
Yeah, that's aggressive.
I know. I was just going to say, right? Like a hard thing?
My teacher didn't do that.
Why would you ever say that?
My teacher did was he said, "Hey, you're actually naturally kind of good at drums. If you were going to spend time on something, I would spend it on trying to learn drums."
And that's cool. If you want to maybe redirect, be like, "Hey, I think this might be better suited to you." But yeah, well, I think too, like, you know, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't stick with piano lessons because I can play some chords and mess around, but I am not a piano player by any stretch. Right. And I wish I was. Like, it's something that actually I think I'm going to actually do and take lessons at some point. But it was partially just because sometimes the lessons I was taking, like, I wasn't interested in the music they wanted me to learn. I was like, I don't care about this song. This song sucks. If you were like, "Hey, Megan, want to learn how to play Desperado on the piano?" I'd be like, "Hell yeah." And I would have practiced and probably stuck with it. But yeah, it's like understanding the student that you're teaching and finding a way to teach them like in an effective way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still take lessons too. I love it. And I, if anyone is listening to this, is a musician and you're a professional, take some lessons. You know what I mean? Like you can go get a piano teacher. We can always learn more.
Yeah. We can, I can always be better. I know that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I still take fiddle lessons and
I love that.
I take guitar lessons and whatever.
Well, and I think too, it's like, especially for me playing live, like with my guitar playing, I try and be more intentional about spending time playing my guitar now, because I get into some bad habits sometimes performing, because I'm putting so much into the performance and the show aspect of it. Like I know sometimes when I'm like, okay, I didn't play guitar great that show. Like I messed a few things up, and I'm like, I need to sit and make this second nature. I need to sit down and practice this, you know? And I think that's such an important thing to keep up with as you progress, and like even as you get better and you get more opportunities. Like I always want to make sure that I belong wherever I'm at. I want to make sure that whatever opportunity is given to me, that I am rising to the occasion and doing it justice, you know, and not like half-assing it. So yeah.
I think that comes through when you meet you two. Like I would say that people might consider you intense, but I don't
Who, me? I would say that, put that on a fucking t-shirt. Some people might consider her intense, Nikki T.
But in my opinion, that intenseness is what makes you driven.
It's
right?
passion. It's it just, is. I'm a very passionate person. And yes, I know that it's a lot for some people. But, you know, if I'm not your thing, that's cool.
The majority of the people that are successful. Right. The majority of the people that are successful, some people will say they are intense.
Yeah.
Right? That's just part of the thing of you believing in yourself enough that you know what you want and you're steering towards it.
You have to.
Yes.
If there is anything that I've learned, like especially, you know, this new record that I've been working on.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. No, that was a perfect segue because, you know, this record, I would say kind of the underlying theme of a lot of it is, you know, a theme of a journey of kind of really finding my true self and learning how to love myself. And that came from like a lot of pain and working through a lot of like trauma. And, you know, so the title track Golden Child is a great sort of all encompassing piece of music that kind of speaks to the whole record's theme. It's, you know, written from the perspective of if I could send a letter back in time to my younger self and give her a little bit of advice. You know, the record starts with the Kurt knows.
Oh yeah, same.
The record.
I was like, I'm gonna listen to this. The first song, I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. Heavy. So, it's heavy. It is the most like the most raw,
for sure,
deepest, most honest thing I've ever written. And you know, this is actually gonna be the first time I've ever really spoken about this. Mm-hmm. So basically, I came into this session with Karen Kozowski and Emily. And so Karen is one of the producers on my record. Incredible. And I was going through a lot. Very long story short, my mother and I had a very difficult relationship that was, you know, really falling apart at this point in my life. I started going to therapy. And basically, in therapy, I learned some things. I became aware of some things and became aware of the fact that a lot of things that happened to me and the way I was treated was not, in fact, not healthy or normal or okay. And all the ways that had shaped me as a person and led me to other bad, toxic, abusive relationships. And, you know, as Mitchell and I were getting ready to get married, we were months out and I told him, I said, you know, I can't imagine a world where she is at our wedding and it doesn't ruin the day in some way. Like our relationship is so bad right now and I'm so at the end of my rope. And I spoke with my therapist and I decided to write her a letter where I basically just said, these are all the ways that you've really deeply hurt and damaged me. I feel like I've given you so many opportunities to take accountability and change and like do better. And it's just, it never happens. And, you know, I'm working on myself. I'm getting ready to start my own family. And it's really important to me. Like, I've built so many great relationships and I have this life that I really love and I want to protect it. I want to protect my own happiness and my peace and this new family that I'm building. And so, you know, until you can take some accountability and do some real work, like, I can't have you in my life. and she never responded. So to this day, you know, and so when I went into that session to write that song, it had been 3 days since I had sent her this letter without a response. And as hurtful as that was, it mostly was kind of just affirming what I already knew. And it also gave me permission to move on. It gave me permission to finally speak about it. I mean, when I went in there, it was funny because we were trying to write something else. We were throwing around ideas, and I was just so kind of consumed with what was happening that I just was like, I can't do this. And I was like, here's what's going on. And I spilled my guts. And I was like, and I actually have a bunch of lyrics written down. It was just this like stream of consciousness, like everything I was feeling. And I was finally able to say everything how I felt without feeling guilty about saying it. Because I was like, well, I tried and you didn't even respond. So now I don't owe you anything anymore, right. You know? And Emily was like, and we were trying to write a truck song. That's insane, yeah. Megan. We're writing this song, you know? And so it just really like, it just poured out of me. And it was not only the first time I had ever written a song about it was the first time I'd ever spoken so many of these words out loud. And I think, God, for Karen and Emily for giving me that space and the comfort of feeling like I was able to do that day. And after the song was finished, it was one of those things where I was like, I mean, okay, of course, like I can't put this out, but I, you know, I sent it to my team and everybody was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like what? And it was cool because it wasn't just people saying, holy shit, like this is, whoa, the you know, the topic of it, but mm-hmm. also like, this is one of the best written songs I've ever heard from you. And I got to a place where when I decided that I was going to put it out, and I want to be clear about this because it's not to spite her or to hurt her. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not really about her. It's about me. It's about my experience and all of the ways that, you know, her actions shaped me into the person that I am. And it's not all bad, you know, but I, you know, the first line of that song, I was a golden child. That was what triggered me to name the whole record Golden Child.
Yeah.
And the song Golden Child actually came after I had already decided to name the record that. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But just to finish off about that song, I wrote this song not just for myself, but for anyone else that's in that position, because I think there's a lot of stigma around children, like adult children, setting boundaries with their toxic or abusive parents. You know, this narrative, oh, it's your parent, like you know, you need to stick by them, you mm-hmm. need to work on the relationship. And the reality is like, okay, but like, have you ever just met an asshole or like a toxic person? Yeah. And everyone's like, yes. And it's like, okay, well, that is probably somebody's mother, father, grandfather, brother, sister, whatever. Yeah. Like, being family, being blood does not give somebody a free pass to mistreat you.
Right.
And so if that song is going to help someone else, you know, get to that place that I'm at, that freedom of finally being like, this is giving me permission to move on, set the boundaries that I need to set and not feel guilty about it and know that like this decision that I've made is what's best for me. And I don't have to explain it to anyone or apologize for it to anyone. If they can't be bothered to understand my perspective and what I've been through, then they don't deserve my explanation. And so if it opens up that conversation and helps someone else, then that is just so valuable to me.
I think so too. I think that's what I get from the song is there's so many people that wouldn't touch that topic.
Yeah.
That you making it okay to touch it
mm-hmm.
is giving someone that might be in a similar situation, maybe not even with a parent, maybe mm-hmm. with a friend, maybe yep. with a roommate.
Yep.
It gives them that opportunity to say, well, if Megan can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah. Well, and it's just like, you know, I reached a point in my career when I set out to make this record, I made myself a promise that I would hold nothing back, that I would not compromise my vision and this idea that I had in my head of what this record needed to be if I was really going to tell my story. That is such a massive part of my story. Mm-hmm. It's my biggest heartbreak, worse than any asshole guy I've ever dated. You yeah. know, that's my biggest, deepest hurt, and it's shaped me in so many ways. And so I can't tell my story and leave that part out. It just is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love like songs that say things that people want to say but can't, you know? So it's that's definitely one of them for sure.
Yeah.
And I know people that are in the same boat as you are, so you're not alone.
Well, and that's been even just in the people that I've shared it with, you know, before it coming out. Even, you know, one of the people that played on the record had said, you know, wow, that song really hit home for me. And I could hear it in the playing on the record. I mean, yeah, I was like, yeah, I kind of felt that when I got the mix back and I heard the emotion. I was just like, oh, my gosh. And that's what music is for. Like, yes. when I think about the songs that, like, saved me, the songs that I listened to on repeat, the songs that inspired me, the songs that made me want to stand up for myself, the song, you know, all of these songs that inspired me in such a positive way, like, that's why we do this, is to have an impact on people, to write songs that become part of, like, the soundtrack to someone's life and their memories and their triumphs, you know, their losses, their wins.
Yeah. And I mean, I heard that song, same thing, turned on the album because we were, you know, having you on the podcast.
I love it.
And that just hit me right in the chest. So yeah. It's such a statement song. Mm. And it's so, you have to be grown as a person to be able to express what you've expressed.
Yeah.
22-year-old Megan probably wasn't ready to do that.
I could, no, not even close. Oh my God. 22-year-old Megan wasn't ready for a lot of things. Let me tell you something. Right.
But that's,
she was just trying to stay alive.
Yeah. That's the thing that I love. And we had a Charles Wesley Godwin on the pod, and he was talking.
I love that.
Yeah. And he was talking about how he was excited to be in front of fans of Luke's because he feels like he's in a place in his life kind of where Luke is. Mm-hmm. And so they have like a large crossover with that.
Yep.
You know, a 22-year-old kid talking about whatever they're talking about when you're 22 isn't the same person as someone who has lived life. Not only lived life, but had enough challenges where you realize what the big challenges really are.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think, like, for me, in the earlier stages of my career, like, you know, I worked with some people that, you know, just did not want me to be everything that I was. They wanted to cherry pick a few things about me that they thought were like marketable or acceptable. Yeah. And then kind of like came for us, like hidden back here, like, literally being told, don't tell people how old you are. And it's like, that does a number on you when you suddenly think that there's something inherently wrong with you, like as a woman, because you're, you know, in your 30s or almost 30 instead of like 21 or 22, like you are somehow less valuable. When to me, I was like, what do you mean? I'm like more valuable. I have lived, I have stories to tell. I have something to say. And I'm not saying that people in their young 20s, they have something to say too. And I also did that, you know, but don't tell me that I'm like, you know, past my prime or something when I feel like I'm just getting to the best parts of me. I'm just getting to a place where I'm writing the best songs I've ever written, because not only have I lived some life, but I've spent years, decades honing in this craft and working on becoming a better songwriter, a better singer, a better guitar player, so that I could write better songs. Yep. And, you know, for some people, yeah, they're that person. They're that it at 21, 22. And that's great. That I was still figuring it out and growing. And I know that I feel that I'm in my prime now and I have more to say than ever before.
Yeah.
I will say, if you're listening to this and any of this is interesting to you, there's a song for every topic that we're talking about. You
literally
know what I mean?
Everything.
Like, yes. Yeah. Everything you've been through, I got you. Yeah. But it's like everything you bring up, the age thing, there's a song there. It's like the family thing. It's like a song there. And it's like old music industry shit. It's like there's a song there. It's all on the record. If you want to know anything about this woman, just listen to the record, because it's all out there.
It's all there.
Literally every part of it.
And then if you want to know even more, go watch the docuseries, because there's even more there. And, you know, and that's the thing, like, too, I said, you know, when we were doing the artwork and everything, we're doing vinyl, which I'm so excited about. I've never done vinyl before, and I've always wanted to. And now that it's happening, I'm like, I'm kind of glad this is the first one, because that makes it so much more special that it's like, it's the record to me, you know? And I wanted to write a note, like a thank you kind of sort of instructions, a little bit of like, here's how you listen to the record.
Yeah.
You start it at the top. And you hit play and you listen to it in order, top to bottom, in one sitting. Pour a drink, smoke a joint, a cigar, whatever your, a cup of tea, whatever your thing is, do all of those things. I don't care. Get in your truck and drive, you know, sit on your back deck, whatever it is, and listen in order because it tells a story in order. It goes, it takes you on a whole journey of all this shit I've been through. And the reason why I started with Blood from a Stone was because it was just sort of the catalyst for everything I did after that. It opened a door musically, and as a songwriter, it's like, okay, I went there, so now I can go everywhere. You know what I mean? And it also, it was so freeing to just like say it out loud and be like, yep, this is me. This is some shit I went through. This has shaped me in a profound way. And, you know, and then, but then there's so much, like, as much as there's a lot of pain and hurt there, there's so much hope, I think, in this record too, like, and a lot of empowerment and inspiring people to like love themselves. And there's Mitchell and I's whole love story. I mean, the back half of the record is basically the Mitchell show, you know, and because that has been a relationship that has shaped me profoundly as well. And everything we've been through to keep finding our way back to each other and working through this crazy industry and time apart and what that's been like for us. It's hard. You know, but it's so worth it. I am like deeply in love with him more than ever before. And that has, and I talk about what it took to get to there in the record. And also just what I've been through in this town and what that experience has been like, you know, with the final track. And even though that song is kind of, it's like, yes, this is all this stuff. It's almost killed me, but hey, I'm not leaving. I'm not giving up. I'm going to be here is kind of the final note that we ended on.
So there's heartbreak, there's love, there's, you know, stories, but there's also like just fun, sassy, drinking, smoking country shit on there too, you know?
Yes, Stoned Alone is honestly one of my favorite songs on the record for a number of reasons. Well, one, Caitlin Smith. Let's just talk about Caitlin Smith for a minute because we all have the time. I have ever since the first song I ever heard of hers was Tacoma. That's what it's called, right? Away to
Tacoma. I don't know that song. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, incredible song. I was like, who is this person? Like the songwriting, the voice. And so she had been on my bucket list of people I wanted to write with, work with. I got set up to write with her. I was super excited. And so we had done like a song camp in town thing with Ross Copperman and Caitlin Smith and Ben Williams. And we had already written that day. We wrote Why Couldn't I Cry. We were so like hyped about it. Like if we had just written that song that day, hell yeah. You know, Ross had to leave because he's a great husband. He had an anniversary dinner, I believe, with his wife. But Caitlin and Ben and I were like, Caitlin's like, I got an hour before I got to go to the airport. You guys want to? And Ben was like, power hour, let's do it. And I was like, well, I have this idea, Stoned Alone. And I had a little bit of like a melody progression thing. And I just thought it was cool. And we wrote the song in an hour. And all we had was like this really rough, really kind of shitty work tape, to be honest. But I was like, I freaking love this song. And everybody was kind of like, are we going to cut this? I was like, we're going to cut it. Just trust me. Just let me get into the studio. I'm telling you, it's going to be great. And so it was one of the first times really where I got to go into the studio off this crappy work tape and build it from the ground up, which is the coolest experience as just a musician and an artist. And like the band was so great. We went in with a few kind of, you know, some inspiration and like a bit of direction, but I was like, I just want you guys to listen. Let's just play through it, listen to the lyrics, and just play what you think you need to play for this vibe. And it was so fun. Caitlin came in. I asked her if she would feature on it and sing like some BGV kind of stuff, but like some lead stuff over the top. She sang her ass off. Like when I was in the studio, I was like, how is this real? I can't believe this is my life right now. Like it's when you listen to the song, she sounds absolutely insane. And it just was like, it made the whole song so cool. It was like, it was the last thing the song needed where I was like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely that up-tempo, fun, like party song for the set.
And it's really fun to play live, especially like in Canada where it's legal. And I'm like, hey, light one up. And that's cool. You could do that. It's great.
What a blessing.
Someone threw a joint on stage, actually, when we played it in Moncton. I was like, I like this. More of this.
You like more of that.
Fantastic. I'll take 14.
Yeah.
I always forget when we're touring sometimes, we'll play someplace where it's legal. You know, it's like
what a blessing.
California or Michigan or whatever. Yep. And we played Utah and it's like extremely not cool there to do that. And we've had some folks get in trouble, you know. It's like
you're used to Dustin?
No one directly related to us, but But, you know, just some friends in the crowd light a joint. You know, you're at a concert. You know, cops come over. Oof. Yeah.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah, you gotta.
It's just so silly.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, we just need to get over it. It has proven medicinal properties. People are out here drinking themselves
it's
to
way
death
less
and
bad than this.
Having severe addictions to like pharmaceutical drugs and like, but weed is the problem. Please. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's, I have the same experience. Like, we were at a festival in Michigan and one in Illinois, and the festival had a green room, which was a green room.
Yeah. Love that.
So it's like dab rig that Jelly hit before he went on stage. And like, they're giving out like parting gifts of pre-rolls and stuff like that. It's cool seeing that kind of crossover culturally. Cause I remember when I was a kid, like my mom was like, your cousin Richard smokes weed.
He's a dopehead.
Oh, he's a doper. Yeah.
What's that mean, mom? You know, like I didn't know. And then
shout out cousin Richard.
Yeah.
You know what? You're a real one, cousin Richard.
Yeah.
A man before your time.
Yeah. But it's like, it was so frowned upon when I was younger. I'm 42. So it was so frowned upon back then, especially in small town Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That, but then I remember going to California for the first time before it was legal.
Yeah.
And being like, there's just people smoking weed on the corner. Like, it's no big deal.
And everybody is having a good time. Yeah. Everyone's cool. Everyone's chill. Like, it's for me, like, so I was a competitive snowboarder for many years. And that was like,
what?
You didn't know that, Kurt?
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
bro, pow, dog.
Yeah, bro.
Saw, dude.
Just fucking out for a rip, bud. Yeah. I mean, that was a big dream for the longest time. I wanted to go to the Olympics. One of my best friends
tears
growing up.
Snowboardio.
No, honest. Okay, actually, side note though, when that song came out, like I related to that so hard. For me, it was not the rodeo though; it was the snowboarding. But like, I had some really bad injuries. One in particular that was really severe. I was in my senior year of high school. I was like having an incredible season. I had qualified for Junior Worlds in Switzerland. Like I was like having a great year. And my goal, I wanted to go to the Olympics, and my parents, you know, they wanted me to go to school. And so we had made a deal, and they're like, if you make the national development team, we're cool with you deferring school. And so I was like, I need to, that was my goal. Right. Yeah. And I decided to go in a slopestyle competition just for fun. With a couple of my buddies, one of my childhood best friends, Matt Morrison, incredible snowboarder, went on to 2 Olympics. I was warming up. I was showing off, trying to. Honestly, I went into this jump way too aggressively. And my whole balance was thrown off. So, like, this is my head, this is my board. Mm-hmm. I kind of went into my rotation, but was sort of, like, thrown, like, backwards a little bit, like that. And so I overcorrected, and I basically went like this. And so I snapped my collarbone here, dislocated my shoulder, broken ribs, broke my back, like severe compression fracture, my lower vertebrae, severe concussion. Like truly I should have been paralyzed. Like it was an actual miracle that I was able to walk. And like, I remember being in the air and feeling like fear, like I've never felt in my life. Just like, oh fuck. Like I knew.
It was bad.
I knew it was going to be bad, and there was nothing, like, I just couldn't, whatever. And I don't remember, like, 24 hours, like, everything. I don't really remember going to the hospital. I don't really remember being put in the ambulance. Like, I remember kind of coming to and them asking if I could move my feet. And I could, thank God, you know, but I don't remember, like, anything. Apparently, I was, like, cussing up a storm in the ambulance. And I was like, well, I mean,
that's fair.
I think that's fair, you know, but that was like, I'll tell you this, God learned subtlety doesn't really work with me. And that I think was his not so subtle way of being like, hey, I have this other thing over here for you that is really meant for you, because I really turned to music and just like songwriting. And because I was like laid up for months, like I couldn't do anything. I was depressed. I lost so much weight. I was miserable. Like all of my dreams were just like crushed in a heartbeat. But I just really leaned on music during that time. And, you know, I had to fulfill the deal I made with my parents. So I was going to go to school, and I was like, well, I mean, I guess I'll study music. I had been taking voice lessons and had done like all the Royal Conservatory grades. So I had studied opera. And so I was like, I mean, I guess I'm going to go do that. And so I ended up going to McGill University. And
oh, I've heard of McGill.
Yeah. It's a great school.
Yeah.
In Montreal. And I learned pretty quickly that opera was not really it for me.
Yeah.
And then I decided I wanted to go back to snowboarding. I didn't like the idea of just like leaving it on that note. So I told my parents that I would stay in school part-time and go back to competing for one more year. And so I reached out to the coach in Quebec, and I competed with the Quebec team for a year. It was just like, I just had to get back on my board. Like, I needed to like face the fear, and I kind of needed like closure, I guess. I did end up getting another concussion, which was when my doctor was like, you literally like can't get more of these. So that's when I was like, okay, you know what? I got back on my board. I am now leaving like of my own volition. I was starting to, I had started a band at my school, and like we were starting to play a lot of shows and tour a little bit. So I was like, I was ready to walk away from it and feel like it was my choice that time.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, everything changed when I started playing with like the New Groove Orchestra was a 10-piece funk band that I played in college.
So sick.
It was really cool. We got to play some amazing shows. Like, we got to open for Aretha Franklin at the Montreal Jazz Fest, which was crazy. We opened for Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Toronto Jazz Fest. Like, it was really cool. And that was my first taste of, like, just being on the road. And I was like, this is the thing. And that transitioned into me ending up in a bluegrass band. I left McGill and went to go to Humber College. They had a little bit more of a more modern program where it wasn't like just jazz, just opera. So I ended up in a bluegrass ensemble while I was there, and then ended up finding some people local to the town I grew up in. And we started the Stone Sparrows, which was my bluegrass band. And that was like, we like made our own records. We booked our own tours. We did like a East Coast tour in Canada. We did a West Coast tour. And that was when it was just like, yeah, this is what I want to do for a living. So I went back to my parents and I was like, don't hate me, but I'm going to drop out. Because, you know, I was working like a part-time job. I was playing shows every weekend. I was trying to go to school. I just couldn't maintain it all and be good at it all. And I was like, I don't need a degree. Like, a degree is not going to help me do what I want to do. I want to get a publishing deal. I want to get a record deal. And so my dad was just like, okay, well, he's like, if you're going to do it, don't half-ass it. And also, I'm not paying for anything anymore. But
yeah.
You know what?
Sink or swim.
It truly, no, that was a blessing. I am really glad he did that, because I had to make it work. I had to, one, I was going to figure out real quick, how bad do you really want this? Because if you don't want it really bad, it sucks.
And it's not going
to
work.
It's not going to work. And, you know, and I had to hustle, because I wasn't just like trying to chase the dream. I had to pay rent too. And that made me play a lot of shows. I busked on street corners. I made my money however, wherever, whenever I could. And, you know, that helped my performance chops and just like, it grew my network of like other musicians and people that I could, you know, create with. And I had to really like struggle for it. And I'm grateful to my dad for that, because I don't think it would have worked any other way if I had a safety net.
Yeah.
That's hard. Why he gets a good song on the record.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's one of the things too, it's hard to, unless you do that, it's hard to get those qualities in you. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you have to really push and know that if you fall, you're the only one picking yourself back up.
You have to be comfortable with being the only person that believes in you at any given time.
Yeah.
Or what you're doing. You have to be okay with that.
Yep. And if you don't believe in yourself more than other people do, then it's not going
to
work.
Well, they're looking to you. You set the tone for everything. Like, you are the CEO, president, king, queen, whatever, of your whole universe. Because the reality is like, if your shit doesn't work, everyone on your team will go move on to another artist. Your label will sign someone else. Your publisher will sign another writer. Yep. Your band will go play for someone else. Your manager will find someone else to manage.
Randy!
Just kidding.
Randy!
No, but it's like, if you are not leading the team with like extreme, almost bordering on delusional confidence. Like, you are setting the tone. Like, they are looking to you. If you're not sure of about what you're doing, and if you're not wholeheartedly believing in what you're doing, why the hell would they put their, you know, their money on you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's 100% it.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Gary and Charlie from Muscadine, mm-hmm. and them talking about Raise Rowdy. And they were like, yeah, like, we didn't know when you started if you were going to be a thing that was there for 2 months.
Right.
Or if you were going to be a thing that was that around lasted. For the long haul. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see that you push through and you're here for the long haul.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, you had your own moment of sink or swim kind of a thing. And it's just made you even a better leader and business person and all mm-hmm. that shit, you know?
Well, you got to believe. And sometimes you need a shove. And your dad gave you that shove.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, too, and I think this applies for everyone in this room, there's a passion there, like, yes. that is so strong and that, like, is the spark behind it all. Like, if you don't really, truly love it, if you don't, like, eat, breathe, sleep, think about it all the time, like, it's just, you have to be that obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You really do. I mean, because there's just so many people, especially now, it's, like, such a free market, so to speak, where anybody can get on social media, TikTok, and, like, have a moment which, you know, either leads to a successful career or even leads to a record deal or just some money, like, whatever it leads to. Like, it's not, that is not just reserved for people who have record deals or, you know, have been grinding and doing X, Y, and Z and all the things you're supposed to do. Like, it can happen at any given moment. And because of that, the industry and it is just really oversaturated. There is so much new music. Like, listeners are being inundated with content and new music every single day, like, at all the time. And so you have to part of the game. Like, when people ask me for advice, I'm like, literally just outlast other people.
Yeah. Like, and keep getting better.
Keep getting better. Yeah. Stay focused on building your own sound and your own brand, and, like, don't chase anything except yourself.
Yeah.
Chase your most authentic self at any given time. Don't worry about trends and what's working. Cause if you're trying to chase that, you're already behind the eight ball. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so you just have to stay focused on being your best self, making stuff that makes your heart beat, because that translates and shows to the audience, and just literally don't give up and just keep freaking going, because there will be people that don't want it as bad as you, and they'll fall off. And as they fall off, like, you're going to keep being able to step forward in that line, you know?
Yep. One of the things, too, that's hard is, and it's, I think about this sometimes. I mean, we host so many events that some of them are well attended and some don't have as many people there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it shake some people if mm-hmm. there's not people there for them.
Yep.
But when you've played to 25 people and you're still crushing it, it stops shaking you.
Well,
you know?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's like, you're allowed to feel a little shaken. I mean, dude, I've walked it this year, this summer, I've walked out to some crowds where I'm like, ooh, not what I was hoping for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not that you don't feel that. It's what you do with it. And it's what you choose to do with that information. It's like, either you can get salty and sad about it and, like, bummed out, or you can be like, you know what? I'm going to walk out on the stage and I'm going to prove to everyone why I deserve to have more people in this crowd and a later slot next year.
Yeah.
And just show up and do your job, because at the end of the day, like, even when you think people aren't watching, they are.
Yeah.
So even when, just because you don't see things happening, like, I think a lot of times as the artist, because you hyper fixate on every little thing that doesn't happen or that you don't get, you hyper fixate on what other people are doing and what they're getting and how, like, you know, they're getting this moment and I haven't had that yet, or they're getting this playlist or this tour or whatever. And it's just wasted energy, because, like, you worrying about what everyone else is doing does nothing to progress your career.
Right.
So you take that energy and you go, okay, what is within my power that I can do right now that's going to change my circumstances? And for me, it's like, well, if I go out there and I put on an incredible show and I entertain every single person that's there and I show, you know, whatever promoter or whoever, like, hey, she's a great performer, these songs are good, you know, she's, maybe she doesn't have quite as many people here as we'd like, but I see the potential for it to grow.
Yeah.
And also, she showed up as a professional and did her job well. yep. regardless of how many people are there. And so even if there's only 5, 10, whatever, how many people watching, people are always watching, and you need to be that person all the time, not just when you're winning.
Yep.
You need to be that person when you're losing. Because the other thing about winning is when you get there, you don't want to have to look back and regret the person you were when you were losing. You want to be able to be proud of who you were through the whole process.
Yep. I totally agree with that.
So well said.
Yeah. That is the best piece of advice we've maybe had on this podcast ever. For artists. For real.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, really shit, I've been doing it long enough. I hope I have some wisdom now.
Yeah.
We're not blowing smoke up your ass. I'm just sitting here and just like enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you.
It's powerful. It's powerful to do it, but doing it and helping like, being on a podcast like this where hopefully people will listen to that,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of the same thing as a song helping heal, right? Or like a song giving you motivation to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
Words of affirmation, or like what you've gone through, but mm-hmm. what you've pushed through,
yeah.
more importantly, is what makes this whole thing work. And totally. That's the difference between an artist that is creative and can do it and someone that is driving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, that's, in my opinion, what takes someone from being someone that's good at music mm-hmm. to someone that is really, like, pushing the needle and pushing themselves mm-hmm. to be the absolute best they can be.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, it's, like, it's important to, like, the whole idea of, like, leave things better than you found them. Like, I think I also want to be a part of, like, changing the negative aspects of what we do in, like, the industry of, like, you know, and setting the bar for, like, you know, being on tour with, like, doing shows with you guys and Luke and stuff. You know, I always talk about Luke as such an inspiration to me. I mean, yeah, like the music and the success, but for me, it's more just, it's the way that he's done it. And, you know, the way he takes care of his people and has kept so many of his, like, OG started with him people. And it just gives me so much hope that, like, you can do this without, like, sacrificing your standards of behavior and your morals and the things that matter to you. Like, because I was talking about this the other day. Chapel Roan did this really great interview that has been kind of like going viral. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and I'm like paraphrasing here, obviously, but one thing I saw her talk about is like, as an artist, if you are willing to just like let go of all like boundaries and like standards and sacrifice anything and everything to be successful, you will do very well in the business, because that's what they want from you. Like, everybody wants to take everything and anything they can get from you while it's hot. And a lot of people, as they, you know, they build careers, you have to, like, you are the only one that can hit the brakes. Because everyone around you, even people that love you and care about you, their job is to progress your career. Their job is to get you opportunities, book you shows. You know, their job is to just get all of that for you. And then you show up and you do your part. But you have to be the one to say, hey, I need a break. Or, hey, this is too much. Or, like, I'm sick. I'm exhausted. Or, you know, I need to see my husband or my family. I need to go see my kids. I don't have kids. But, you know, I know that like family is a huge priority for Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much respect for the way he seemingly, at least from the outside, has balanced that, you know, and still found this massive success while remaining someone that people speak highly of, that people love, that people look up to, and also, you know, making sure that his family's taken care of. Because we see a lot of people that go down a kind of a dark road of just like losing themselves and, you know, getting so obsessed with the work where it's like hurting their health, you know, and the industry doesn't care about our health as a whole in a lot of ways. Like, we have to be the ones to speak up. I learned that in my career early on. I had vocal issues, you know, when I was first getting started, and they just wanted me to go, 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 go. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cancel some things. I need to go see a voice doctor. I did have polyps, not nodes, but I mean, I had to get a steroid shot into my vocal cords. I had to be on vocal rest. And I was like, y'all don't understand. Like, I want to do this my whole life. I only get one voice. I have to protect this instrument. And like, I need you to figure out a way to make this work for me without killing me in the process. And if there's one piece of advice I can give to any artist getting started, is like, you have to advocate for yourself. Only you know what your limits are, you know, only you can speak to when you've had too much. And again, like I said, it doesn't mean that the people around you don't care about you. Hopefully a lot of the people around you do, but they don't know, you know, how much you're suffering sometimes. And so you have to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen people been ran to the ground before, you know?
Yeah.
And like everything you said about Luke is so true. And his priorities have always been like his friends and family, mm-hmm. like, you know, especially now that he's a father.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I mean, you can really just, the iron's hot. It's like, maybe it'll never be hot again.
Right.
What if then, like, it's like, let's all, we got to tour constantly and we have to do this show and we have to do this reel TikTok thing. It's like, but it's like, what's the point at one point? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, make some money, but it's like, you got to have time to spend it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
You have to have time also to enjoy all these like milestones you're hitting. Like, and I'm guilty of this. It's like, you know, you chase these things, you know, winning awards or you're like getting number ones. And it, the craziest thing is like, you finally get it and you're already worried about the next thing you got to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like, that's one thing that Mitchell and I have talked about a lot, because we're both very, very driven, very ambitious people, you know, and we work hard. And that's one thing we've tried to be better about. Like, hey, we need to like celebrate even the small things sometimes too. And like, just take a moment to be like, and not always be next thing. Cause I was like, cause you know, Mitchell and I were talking about it one night. He's like, well, I just know that I have more that I need to do and that I want to do. And I was like, yeah, but like, if you're not going to enjoy this thing that you just accomplished now, like when will you, like when you're on your deathbed, you're suddenly then gonna be like, ah, let me think back on all the cool shit I did now and enjoy, you know what I mean? Like, you got to enjoy it in the moment. And that doesn't mean that you can't simultaneously be looking ahead and thinking about where you want to go next. But it's like, these are things you dreamed about for years, and now it's like it's not good enough for you anymore. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's what I was like. My goals and dreams when I kind of decided to be a professional musician was like, I just want to pay my bills and I want to own some property.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've just kind of been chilling in that realm for a while.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I need to like,
as you play stadiums. And
Yeah.
You're doing great. I think you're good, bud.
Well, yeah. I'm the happiest I've ever been. That's for
love
sure.
That.
But, it's like, you know, it's like hard to sit in one place sometimes.
It is. But I think it's just balance. It's like with anything, it's just finding a balance, you know, at the end of the day. And it's hard. The lines are very blurred for us. And when you do music as a job, because it's also your passion and it's like ingrained in like your whole being. Like, I, outside of what I do, like for work, I still am a fan too. Mm-hmm. Like, I obsess over, if I'm not writing my own music or doing my own thing, I'm listening to other music or, you know, and so the lines can get blurred and it can become so all consuming and all encompassing. But, and for me, that never used to matter until all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I have a husband now and we're going to hopefully have a family one day. And I don't want to just get so obsessed and so tunnel vision with my work that one day I turn around and I see I missed all this like actual life that I should have been living. And so, yeah, it's hard to do that when we're both artists.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be really intentional about our time together and making sure that we're maintaining that connection and that intimacy and that we don't just talk about work every time we go out for dinner, you know. Yeah. And it's hard to do because sometimes that's all that's happening in our lives, you know.
Yeah, I struggle with that too, specifically like previously I had a day job where I would do like transactional work and other things and I had that whole side of things. And then now, and I didn't live in an area where everybody was obsessed with music, but now it's like the only stuff that I talk about is music.
Yeah.
And it's kind of draining.
Yeah.
But it's also like, man, what a blessing at the same time.
Well, you know what? The good news is it's almost football season. So we'll have something else to talk about. Go Bills. No. Yeah.
Well, well, like your phone is like 24/7 blowing up with like people asking you to host things or do whatever. You know, it's like your shit's always blowing up, man.
Yeah. Well, we have a company and we have two employees, so it's, you know, like that's kind of how it works.
Rag.
But I mean, again, what a blessing. Like, you had this idea of something you wanted to do, and now you're doing it, and you're doing it at a higher level, continuing to push yourself and push your sound and push what you want to express in your music. Like, who could ask for a lot more than that?
No, I really couldn't ask for more. And I have to, you know, I have to, like, shout out just my whole team and especially Randy. I mean, Randy was really kind of the first catalyst because it was the first time I felt like I was working with someone. I mean, Randy and I were best friends for years before we started working together. And that was one of the things, too. We're both like, I want to work with you because I feel like you would crush this. But, like, is this going to be weird? Like, what if, like, we didn't want to ruin our friendship over it, but you know, I mean, if anything,
sounds like a rom-com.
I know, right?
Friends, what if we fall in love?
Yeah, what if we fall in love? Randy and I are definitely in a very committed relationship. Yeah. But you know, just having a team, like I said, I had kind of my own come to Jesus moment with myself, and then kind of went to the team and was like, hey, I really need like just your trust and the freedom to do this the way I want to do it. Because if I can't do it that way, like, it's just not, I just don't see the point. So if you guys really believe in me and you believe in my potential to be successful and build success with you, I need you to, like, let me do this my way kind of thing. And they did. And, you know, we did a lot of big things. I mean, doing the docuseries was, like, that was a dream. That was a thing that was in the works for a long time. And that came from Ford. So, you know, Ford and I had already shot a lot of music videos and done photo shoots mm-hmm. together.
He's so talented.
He's incredible.
He's
I love him so much.
Wonderful photographer.
Yes, he is. And just like has always been so great at just like bringing out the best in me and making me feel comfortable in what we're doing. And, you know, he basically sat me down. He's like, so I want to shoot like a documentary, docuseries, whatever. He's like, about you. He's like, I just feel like people need to know like the real you. He's like, because anytime I've met someone that's actually gotten to hang out with you and be around you, they love you. And it's like, I feel like it's sometimes different than what people think you're going to be. And then they meet and you're like, oh, she's really cool or whatever. Or she's not so scary. Like, it's like, whatever. I'm actually a very nice person.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was just like, I just feel like we need to really tell your story. He's like, you've lived a lot of lives. Your story is so unique to you. And I want to go behind the scenes and also do a behind the scenes of making this record because this is kind of a fresh start for me. And I just love the idea, but it was such a big thing. I was like, how are we going to do this? And, yeah. And it took so much work and passion from everybody involved to make it happen, from, you know, Randy and Ford and Rebecca to the label and getting them on board with it. And, you know, we had a whole pitch and everything. Like, it was one of the biggest things we'd ever done together. And, you know, we were asking for a big commitment from the label and we really needed to deliver. And it's been such an incredible experience doing that. And I think it's so cool. I was thinking about this the other day that, like, you know, this is part of my like legacy that I'm trying to build. You know, this is something like, hopefully, God willing, one day I've got some kids and they're like, oh, damn, mom was, like, kind of cool back in the day, you know, watching this, like, docuseries and getting to document. It was just, it's been such a special, empowering, fulfilling time in my life, making this record and filming this docuseries and finding my people. And, like, it just felt like it needed to be documented. And it's just, like, an extra piece to the record, like you said. I mean, if you want to know me, just listen to the record. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know more, then go watch the docuseries and you will have it all.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the shameless plug section of the podcast.
Yes.
And then let's talk about where to check stuff out and let's get some dates going and all that.
Yeah. Okay.
So when this is out.
Yes. So
single.
So Golden Child, the single, is coming out September 6th.
Yep.
And that will also be when you can pre-order the album, Golden Child. So that is also the record name. And can I say when the record comes out?
Yeah.
Okay. and the
pre-save it. It'll be like,
okay. Yeah. So you can pre-save it September 6th, and then the record comes out October 11th.
Yeah.
That's so soon. That is so soon.
And can I say the other thing?
Yes.
About Golden Child?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Sorry. And also Golden Child is shipping to radio, going to radio September 9th. So it will be coming to airwaves near you, which I'm just so excited about.
Yeah. It's like people will talk about radio all the time, but it really opens up more people that didn't go look for your song and are hearing it. Mm-hmm. So there's still so much power in it.
Totally.
Opening doors for other people to know you, or if they knew you already, it just brings them back to the line of sight.
Well, so. And I just, like I said, I want my music to be playing on the radio all over the place, so I can tour all over the place, so that I can go sell tickets and start doing my own tour and, you know, put some butts in seats.
Yep. And listening to the record front to back, just like the way you told us to. and I definitely feel like that is the song that stuck out to me the most.
Golden Child?
Yes. Yeah. So it makes sense that's what we're going to radio for.
Thank you. Well, I think it, again, it's really hard to like kind of tell people who you are inside of like 3 to 3.5 minutes when you're like a new artist going to radio. It's like, okay, this could be like, you're hoping it's going to be like a defining single for your career. It's going to be a song you're going to have to play every single night for the rest of your career. And you want it to be good representation of who you are, of your, you know, your musical style and just like everything that you are as an artist. And I do feel like it really embodies that and just like where I'm at in life right now.
Yeah, it's a perfect first song.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Appreciate that.
I mean, not that you haven't been on the radio before, but like.
Well, not really in America.
Right.
Yeah. Canadian mostly.
Not with like an official single. So, I'm excited about that. And especially for, you know, even though we haven't been at radio, you know, I've been touring pretty consistently more and more in the US over the last few years. And so I'm, you know, building this great fan base out there too. So I know it's like, it'll be exciting for those fans who have been kind of in my corner before to all be like, oh my God, you're on the radio, you know? And so it's, and for me too, it's like, yeah, I want to hear my songs on the radio. Yeah. That's still the dream, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we talked a lot about,
me. Let's talk about you.
No,
yeah. I'm just
kidding. No, we talked a lot about being in the moment and being grateful and not looking forward too much. Obviously, there's a lot to look forward to, but is there anything you want to end on, anything that's just some gratitude?
Well, honestly, I'm just like really grateful for you guys and for the opportunity. This has been such an amazing conversation, and
I agree.
I'm just grateful for all the support you show me over the years, and I love that we're still here doing it. I love, like, Kurt, I'm grateful for you that you FaceTime me when my husband's playing shows, and I'm grateful that
I FaceTime him when you're when playing shows.
Yeah, and I'm grateful that, like, you know, when I'm playing and I see you side stage taking pictures, rocking out, like, that just means so much to me. And I'm grateful for Randy over there who works herself into the ground every day for me and what we're building together, and just her belief in me and like her having the courage to, you know, do this with me and give me the you know, the motivation that I need on the days when I'm like feeling a little low.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we're grateful for you for sharing your story with us. And honestly, one of my favorite pods we've done.
Aww.
Good learning experience, I feel like.
Yeah. And super insightful, honestly. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think there's lots of wisdom in the things that you've shared with us. And thank you for doing that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Love it.
Well, guys.
All right. Well, my name's Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nikki T.
And we'll see you on the front row.